listening to the High Spot Podcast, Battle Club Pro Special Edition. I am Jeff Martin alongside the Trendsetter. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast, as well as all our other social media platforms. Follow, subscribe, review, and comment on our iTunes. You can follow us on the B Plus Player Radio Network and soon Shining Wizards Radio Network. Trendsetter, what's going on, man? November the 4th, Ridgefield Park, New Jersey, they all fall down. Battle Club Pro, man, I'm excited.
I'm excited too, man. It's a huge anticipation, finally building up to a climax November 4th for the one-year anniversary of Battle Club Pro. And it's just great for us to actually be part of this whole celebration of the one-year anniversary and a lot of first-hand matches we're going to see.
So we've had Gary J on. We've had Shane Mercer on. We've also had Mr. Grimm.
Don't forget about him.
No, don't forget about him. The open body bag challenge that night. So it's going to be crazy. And now we're going to have a sponsor to the show. Someone who's really, really well knowledge about the wrestling business and everything else in entertainment and as well as the video game. Patrick Hickey Jr. will join us. Of course, he has written a book, The Minds Behind the Game, interviews with cult and classic video game developers. And he's also a sponsor for Battle Club Pro, They All Fall Down. So it's going to be interesting to have a chance to talk to him here today on the High Spot Podcast.
Not only talk to him, Jeff, but again, if you guys want to look at all the stuff he's doing, you guys can catch all of his work and everything he's up to at ReviewFix.com. You can catch him on Twitter as well, at ReviewFix. I mean, it's amazing, man. He's really knowledgeable in terms that he went in for a journalism background. He majored in it. He's great at it. He worked at NBC, for example. He worked for all these areas, but his passion was pro wrestling. His passion was video games. And you see an in-depth conversation that I have with him about, you know, development of that, but more importantly, also the development of his relationship with Battle Club Pro.
So we've talked to the wrestlers, and now it's time to talk to the sponsors, because you know what? They provide, and they also help to promote this Battle Club Pro special edition. They All Fall Down, one-year anniversary. So without further ado, here is our interview with Mr. Review Fix himself, Patrick Hickey Jr.
So without further ado, Patrick, thank you so much for giving us a few minutes of your time and coming on the show, man.
Yeah, man, no problem. Happy to be on and talk some wrestling.
I know, some wrestling, right? Some old-school wrestling back in the day, man.
Yeah.
Well, first, let's get started. Like, what kind of led to the point of you sponsoring the event and your relationship with Battle Club Pro?
Oh, it's a pretty crazy story. I'm 2 years older than one of the partners of Battle Club Pro, Kino Morales. And we hooked up again, like, on Facebook. He was like, oh, dude, what's up? We went to high school together. And I'm like, yeah, man, what's up? And we started BSing. And he's been working with Battle Club Pro and Wrestle Pro and a whole bunch of places. And I've been a journalist. I've worked at NBC. I run my own entertainment website. And I've covered wrestling for, you know, like 12 years. And he would ask me questions like, oh, what do you think of this match? What do you think of that match? And then I know a lot of wrestlers in the indie scene because I've interviewed them. So, like, I talk to guys, like, about their finishes. I give guys moves to use and stuff like that. So it just, my next book is a wrestling book. And I figured if I wanted to get really, like, deep and down in the trenches, like, working with a promotion would be the perfect way to go. And Kino and Carlos Aristi from Battle Club Pro were just like, all right, here you go. And they basically helped give me, like, the keys to the castle. I'm kind of like the smoking man, the guy in the corner of the room that nobody knows. So
like
it worked out really good.
Attention to that man behind the curtain type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's been a lot of fun. And, like, I'm still doing a ton of interviews, like, cause I'm starting to do interviews for my book. So, last week I interviewed Ted DiBiase. I got, like, a good hour with Ted DiBiase. Tomorrow I have Gary Michael Schippetta, who's, like, one of, like, the best ring announcers of, like, that old school, like, 80s era. So it's like I just keep nailing interviews and putting them together so I can put the book together.
Wow, that's amazing. We actually spoke to Ted DiBiase a little bit when we went to the event in Rahway, New Jersey, Wrestle Pro. So we spoke to him a few minutes, coming out with his documentary, one night only event. Pretty interesting choice there in terms of getting ready for a response. I'm surprised it wasn't going out further. It was only going to go out for one night. Speaking of that, though, coming from the mindset that you said you're coming out with a book and you've interviewed a lot of talent out there, I mean, where did it all start in terms of professional wrestling? I mean, for Jeff and I, it was basically the fact that we watched this as we were kids, like as most people do, and really never grew out of it. And then eventually we start, you know, as you get older, you start realizing the behind-the-scenes type of stuff. What kind of drew you to professional wrestling growing up as a kid?
Well, I just want to say that, like, my goal in life is to never grow up. So I'm doing the voice of a main character in a video game that's coming out next year. I got my first video game book out. I interviewed, you know, 36 great video game developers. I'm doing the wrestling book now. So it's like I have a master's degree. I'm a full-time college professor. I'm a father. I'm a husband. But I'm a big kid. you know? So it's like wrestling to me is like the pinnacle of enjoyment. It's like I watch a match and it's like I can watch a Bret Hart match and I know what's coming, when it's coming, how it's going to come, but it's still enjoyable to me. I watch anywhere from like 8 to 10 hours of pro wrestling a week. My wife hates it sometimes, but I mean, it's just to me, it's like the ultimate soap opera. It's just that suspense of disbelief. It's like you ever see The Lion King on Broadway?
Yeah, I did.
So it's like for like 5 or 10 seconds, you go to yourself like, I know those aren't really lions, but like I feel like they are. And like great wrestling is like that, and it's like it's ebb and flow. So we'll have years of like crap before we get to like really good stuff. But when you get that really good stuff, it's amazing. So for me, watching, you know, Piper's Pit as a kid, you know, watching Shawn Michaels kick Marty Jannetty through the glass window, it's like stuff like that just totally hooked me on this. And then, you know, I was like 12, 13 when the NWO came out, and I was at 12, 13, I was already trading tapes with people and stuff. And it was just, it's always been a part of my life. When I was in high school, I worked in the school library. One of the reasons was because that's where all the girls were, but the other reason was because they had Pro Wrestling Illustrated from like the 70s on, you know. And yeah. Bill Apter is definitely like one of my wrestling journalistic heroes, and being able to read his stuff all the time was great, and it totally hooked me. I've never not watched wrestling, so I hope that answers your question.
No, it does, because like you just mentioned before, Jeff and I actually went through our phases too. We never stopped watching it, but there are different points in our lives where we started watching the product and saying to ourselves, why are we continually watching this? Because in our mind, we were like, well, you know, this product is pretty bad right now, considering going back from the Attitude Era. Why are we still watching it? Again, like you just said before, you're just wrestling fans and you have to be around it. Talking about that, I mean, from the perspective of growing up as a fan and now how involved you are within the business, sponsoring Battle Club Pro, going behind the scenes, interviewing guys like Ted DiBiase, where has your mindset feel has changed from the fan that you once were and still are to right now you're actually in that type of world?
See, that's the thing, too. I think once I started writing about like professional wrestling and once I started interviewing guys, I totally like took that fan label off, and it sucks. But I refuse to take a picture with a pro wrestler because I feel like I'm not a fan. I shouldn't take a picture. I remember I interviewed Ultimate Warrior and I was working at NBC and I was like, all right, can I get a picture? And he's like, yeah, only if you're in it. And I'm like, no, man, it's for the article. And he's like, well, I don't understand why you can't be in the picture. And I was like, because I'm like, as much as like, I love what we just did, like that we just spoke for a half hour about everything. I'm like, I can't take a picture with you because that crosses the line and I'm not a fan. And I'm a journalist. It's my job to document your story, you know? So it's like, I feel like crossing that line into like where I am now is so much better than ever being a fan, because being a fan, it's like when your guy loses, you feel upset. And do I still feel upset when some of my favorites lose? Yeah, absolutely. But my job is to tell the story, tell people what happened, document the match. Or when I'm interviewing somebody, I mean, I've interviewed professional wrestlers that I didn't particularly care for, like what they did in the ring, or I thought they were overrated or something like that. But then getting to know them as a person and a performer and learning why they do the things, you get a greater understanding. You cross that line. You go to something higher, you know, than just a fan.
Definitely understandable there. Like I said, sometimes it's hard to not cross that line because I'm sure that the mark inside you so badly wants to take a picture with, for example, somebody like Ultimate Warrior.
Oh, yeah.
Can you go into depth of when you were talking to Warrior? I mean, what a story that was, right, in terms of the hiatus, the exile he was from WWE, and then the whole reconciliation, and then his whole WrestleMania situation, and him passing away literally days afterwards. In your mindset, was that probably maybe the best closure you could ever get in terms of his career?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this guy just, he wanted redemption. He wanted vindication. He wanted to have that moment, you know, with Vince and Hogan to just be like, I wasn't just the flash in the pan that you guys made me out to be, you know. And getting to speak with him that day, it's like we had two, like, encounters. So the first time, it was WWE 2K14. Okay. And I did a really good interview with him, and then we had the whole picture thing. But it was like, he was really cool. He's brutal, honest guy. So it's like, I told him, I'm like, you ever think about in, say, 1991, 1992, you wrestling Sting? Like, you guys came up together, but 91, 92, you guys are both like killing it in two different promotions. And he flat out said, he was like, you know, Sting wouldn't have been able to like roll with me back then. He wasn't a top guy. He didn't follow direction and stuff like that. And I was like, wow. Like, I did not expect that. He's like, Sting was the kind of guy that you needed to like kind of lead. Like, this is where you wanted to go and blah, 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 blah. Like, I didn't expect that, because to me, if you ask me who's a better worker, I say Sting 20 times out of 20, you know? And like, mm-hmm. those Sting Great Muda matches back in the day, 90, 91, those are some of my favorite matches of all time. Like, my first AOL screen name was Dragon Screw 714 because of Great Muda, you know?
Really nice.
So it's like, hearing Warrior be like that blunt, like he was a guy that had an opinion. And the thing is too, he's one of those people that didn't have a lot of friends, because he would tell people flat out how he felt about them. So I think that's something that you have to respect, you know? So what ended up happening was, I ended up getting the picture of him. And like 3 months later, 2K flew me and like, you know, probably like 20 other gaming journalists to LA for SummerSlam. That's when Brian won the belt, and then Orton cashed in. It was a pretty cool moment. Earlier in that day, Warrior gave a speech to like the journalist, and no one clapped. And the reason why no one clapped after is because it was like one of the realest speeches I've ever heard in my entire life. He's like, all you guys see is tassels and paint and stuff. But he's like, I slept in my car, like in 15 degree weather, eating like Doritos for dinner to do this. And people don't see that. He's like, people see what they see on a stupid DVD, and they hear stupid promos that I did and stuff. He goes, no one sees like the sacrifice that I made for this, you know? And he shut up everybody. That entire room, you could have heard a pin drop. And then after, he took pictures with people and stuff like that. And then I walked over and I got a couple of more quotes from him. And he totally remembered. Like, he's like, oh, do you want to take a picture with me now? And I'm like, this guy must get interviewed so many times,
yeah.
Especially at that moment, because that's when he got involved with 2K and back with the WWE. So for him to remember me like 3 months later shows that like, this is a guy that's really sharp. He's probably like one of the smartest like wrestlers that I've ever interviewed.
Yeah, definitely. Warrior was always someone who was obviously outspoken and kind of stood behind his own beliefs of what he felt was right or wrong. And no, you're right,
sure.
About that. I might have been marking out, and you know, no sense, probably at that stage, still very intimidating guy, just because of his personality.
Oh yeah,
but
I mean, I'm 6'4", like 315 pounds, and he scared the shit out of me. So
I can imagine.
Yeah,
especially wearing that Warrior paint too. It still brings back memories. Like, man, this guy could literally kick my ass still, because he kept in such great shape even at that time.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Just one more question about that interview, though. It's like, it seems so surreal, for the fact that I've seen certain interviews he's done before, like shoot interviews, for example, and it always seemed to be the fact that everybody's wanted to go back and say, well, what was your thought on this and this and this? And he really said, you know, I don't remember much of that stuff. It was more of just work. It was a job, and I went and I did it, and well, and so a lot of people, I felt, were a little offended, thinking, well, you know, these are important moments to us. How come it's not important moments to you? During that interview you had a 2K, and then obviously the other one you had when you had a follow-up when you did that that talk to all the journalists.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think as he got older he started kind of reflecting back and realizing, hey, you know what, as much as it was a work, you could see how much it affected people still and how they're still huge fans of his?
Absolutely. There was a moment in the first interview where he was talking about a match in WWE, like probably like the third time he came back in like 95 or 96 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about the match, and I forgot what match it was, but his little daughter, who had to be like 9 or 10 years old, she corrected him, and she was like, no, it was against this guy. And he's like, oh yeah, you're right. So to me, that shows me that he showed his daughters his matches, and they were just as involved in like what he was trying to do. And to me, that like, that completely like won me over, because in the beginning it's kind of like, all right, how does it feel to be involved with WWE again? How does it feel to be in a video game? And then, you know, I started asking questions about, you know, like the territories when he first started and stuff. And then on the returns to the WWE, and then when his daughter jumped in, it was just like, yeah, this guy, he's a badass, He doesn't take any shit from anybody, but he's a dad, and he, like, loves, he loved his daughters. Like, you could tell it was totally obvious, you know? So it's like, from that, I think, yeah, as he got older, he wanted to share what he did in the WWE with more people. And he didn't want to be one of those guys that just went on YouTube and cut rants and stuff like that. I think, like, if Savage would have had a little bit more time with us, I think that we would have saw that from Randy Savage as well. You know, I'm really happy that the WWE gave Warrior that opportunity to, like, to get some redemption, because he deserved it.
No, yeah, he definitely deserved it. And I think also the fans so badly wanted to see it too for so many years, and to hear him speak and talk was so amazing. Jeff and I were there in New Orleans when it happened, and when you just mentioned, you know, like the likes of guys like Macho Man Randy Savage or even Rick Rude, for example, it was kind of, we felt cheated, or even Kurt Hennig, you know, Eddie Guerrero, we felt cheated in a way as the fans. I'm not speaking for anybody here, because we wanted to hear them speak. We wanted to hear their words, not what other people interpreted how they thought of certain things. So definitely great.
Oh yeah, Brian Pillman,
I mean, exactly.
That's a guy I think of every single day when I watch wrestling. I'm like, oh, if Brian Pillman was here, this would be so much more entertaining.
Isn't it amazing after all the years have gone by that the name Brian Pillman gets thrown out there and still is, it's incredibly relevant now in the world of professional wrestling?
Yeah, I mean, because you can't teach that type of charisma. Sorry for the crappy Enzo Amore pun, but
don't worry.
Yeah, man, there are people out there that, like, would kill, literally kill, to have that type of charisma. And it was like, he's like the Hamlet of professional wrestling. Like, is he crazy? Or is it just a joke? And how far do you take it when you actually, like, believe it? He was a Shakespearean character come to life, you know?
No, so. Definitely was. And like I said, so ahead of his time, as Jeff and I have spoken about several times. And to this day and age, imagine if he was still around. I could see him being involved in the business in some way or form. And just, you know, look at his son now. His son, Brian Pillman Jr., is going to be taking the reins and become a professional wrestler. Can you imagine the type of pressure, you know, for the fact that he didn't really know his father at that stage in his life? And now that he's going to take the mantle of that, has to be tremendous pressure. And we're definitely pulling for him too, because when you have the last name Pillman, you better deliver. So looking forward to see what Brian Pillman Jr. has. Let's talk about the book real quick, the one you have that's coming out. You know, you're talking about, you know, interviewing Ted DiBiase for an hour and all these great things, talking to Warrior and things of that nature. The book you have, your wrestling book coming out, what can people expect when they read something like this? Because a lot of it sometimes are just like interview-based, they're documentaries. What perspective are you trying to give the fans that are reading this book when it comes out?
So let me just explain. Like, my first book comes out in January. It's called The Minds Behind the Games, Interviews with Cult and Classic Video Game Developers. And it's basically me taking you behind the scenes of 36 of, like, the coolest video games that we all played when we were kids. And I get interviews with all the developers and things like that. So that's kind of like the mindset for the video game book. And for the wrestling book, I wanted to take that, but I wanted to take it to the next level. So it's not just interviews with guys and them talking about their careers, because I've already done that in the video game world. So this is more like, there's going to be a chapter on, like, promoters, and I'm going to interview, and I've already done interviews with several promoters where they talk about, like, how they book talent, how they book matches. And there's going to be comments from promoters that you're going to be like, holy shit, I can't believe they said that. Or there's going to be a comment in there where you're going to be like, wow, that's pretty cool. I didn't think, like, a promoter thought that way. And then, like, there'll be another chapter on the indie scene and what all these guys have to do, you know, in order to, like, move up. And it's going to be from multiple, you know, frames of mind. I'll talk to, like, you know, an up and coming indie guy, or I just interviewed Jack Swagger 2 weeks ago, and he talked to me about what it's like to be on the indie scene now after, like, never really experiencing that, being, like, one of the WWE's, like, chosen ones. You know, he, like, kind of got pushed through the development process. So it's like that. It's like, so there's basically going to be anywhere from, like, 20 to 25 chapters that kind of, like, debunk all of the popular, like, misconceptions about professional wrestling. So,
wow, looking forward to that as well. When you're talking about the first book that's coming out, were you a huge gamer growing up as well?
I have like over 2,000 video games across like 30 consoles. In addition to, like, covering professional wrestling, I've covered the video game industry for over 10 years. I've covered professional hockey and professional baseball for over 10 years. So it's like, I told you, I don't want to grow up. So I'm a super geek. I've got a lot of interests. Mm-hmm. I love the history of things. So that took me into, like, wanting to work with video games too. So, like, right now I'm going to be the voice of the main character of this upcoming survival horror game called The Padre. and I play like a Catholic demon hunting priest. So it's like I go from writing about video games to like actually being in a video game. So like I'm doing this wrestling book. Who knows what could happen? So
you know, I've always loved about video games is the mere fact that I don't know. I could be wrong because I'm a novice when it comes to this. For example, wrestling, I feel pretty comfortable talking about. When it comes to video games, though, I've gone on YouTube. I've read the books. I've looked because I've always loved the behind the scenes type of stuff, the development. You know, for example, a game that I loved while playing a long time ago, Mortal Kombat, which to me was the first ever. Like, wow, you're seeing blood in a video game.
That's featured
in my
book.
Yeah, you're seeing guts and gore. And all that stuff, and it's exciting, especially when you're a kid seeing that stuff and how popular the game was.
Oh, yeah.
And the mythologies and all that stuff is exciting. So when it comes to, I guess it's a two-part question here, the video game world out there, I've seen the specials and, like, for example, overseas, I'm sure in Japan and China, it's crazy. Even if you're mixing into the world of professional wrestling, I mean, you look at Kenny Omega, look at Xavier Woods, Up, Up, Down, Down, all about video games.
Yep.
Do you think that's something that hasn't been touched a lot and been brought to a lot of people's attention in the mainstream media? And secondly, when it comes to all the consoles and stuff like that, what was your favorite one? I mean, are you still a classic Nintendo guy or an Atari, PlayStation 4, Xbox? Which one's your favorite console to use?
So to answer the first question, I think it's so funny because I forgot who said it, but it was like an old interview and they were talking about how like the wrestlers in Minnesota back in the day used to get a lot of their valets from like the porno studios over there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, wrestlers and porn at that time just like mixed. Those people got along, you know. Now that like we're in like the PG era of the WWE, video games and wrestling just work out beautifully. Like a lot of people that game also watch wrestling. It's like that's one of the reasons why two of the games featured in my book, one of them is WWF WrestleMania, the arcade game, which is a super fun wrestling game. It's made by the same guys that did NBA Jam. And it has kind of like that Mortal Kombat feel to it. And then the other one is Pro Wrestling X, which has been in development for like over a decade. It's like a love letter to No Mercy, which is one of the greatest wrestling games of all time. So it's like there's definitely an intersection. And I feel like we're just starting to like tap into it. So you have like TJ Perkins, who for a little while had that video game thing going on. Xavier Woods, Kenny Omega does it awesome. So I don't think that this is the end of video games and wrestling crossing over. Not at all. In terms of the systems that I play, like I said, I play everything. I feel like a real gamer, just like a real wrestling fan or a real wrestling journalist or anything. They don't have brand loyalty. That's one of my favorite things about gaming and wrestling. So it's like if the PS4 has like a bad year, I got a Switch right next to me. So I'll play the Switch instead, you know? And as far as like, I remember 2005, 2006, I could not watch WWE. I was like, what is going on here? And then in TNA, you've got AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, Chris Sabin. You have all these guys tearing down the house. You had Sting come back. You had Christian Cage finally getting like a legit shot at a singles career. So, I mean, and now, I mean, I still love the WWE, but like when I want to watch like a really good match, I watch Lucha Underground, Ring of Honor, or New Japan, you know? So it's like there's a never-ending supply of flavors, which is it's the best thing. Like if you like first person shooters and you don't want to play Call of Duty, there's another one out there. And it's like if you want to watch wrestling and you're not in the mood for Raw, you can go on the Fight TV app, you can go anywhere you want, and you can watch wrestling from all over the world and experience it any way that you want. It's like a super unique time to be a wrestling fan.
Yeah, definitely. Jeff and I have talked about the uniqueness about that as well and how it's probably one of the best times that I can remember from my memory of being a wrestling fan, because before you had the two major companies, you know, WWE, at that time WWF, and WCW, the whole Monday Night War thing was pretty exciting. But once that kind of went away, there really wasn't much for, you know, much competition or more, a lot of places where talent could go and actually, you know, become stars or, hone their craft and learn and get that experience they so desperately need. Now you have, you know, Ring of Honor, you have New Japan Wrestling, you have Lucha Underground, for example, you know, all these other areas outside the juggernaut, which is WWE. Do you feel right now with social media being the way it is right now, it's just like, it's definitely gone back. It's gone away from the, you know, whole tape trading days to now the point where everybody can market themselves, to the point where maybe, do you feel like we're maybe too oversaturated with the content right now?
See, the thing is, it's like what I tell a lot of the guys that I work with, a lot of the indie guys, I tell them that they should cut promos like on their page, that they should create a brand for themselves. And like, this is a guy that I've never had that conversation with, Darius Carter, who does it by himself. And like Jay George is another guy on the indie scene that I haven't had that conversation with, and he naturally does it by himself. There's a lot of guys that like what they do is they take the time out to make themselves different, and that's what you have to do. Because you're right, it is very oversaturated. It's like, I'm a college professor and I have breaks during the day and stuff like that, and I'll put on the Fight TV app, or I'll go on my computer and watch the WWE Network and stuff. So it's like never ending, but there's a lot of mediocre stuff. So the thing is, guys have to work a lot harder to get themselves over, and a lot of these indie guys can all, a lot of them can work, but they haven't developed that type of character, and I feel like that's what they need to do. Their social media channels should be dedicated to them developing that character. You know, there's a guy, an indie guy, his name's Ronnie Burton, and Seth Rollins trained him, and he's really good. He does a gory buster as his finisher. It's called the shortest straw. It's like kind of like a ode to Metallica. And I remember his debut was for a Bronx promotion, 2KW Pro, and he cut like a 3-minute video of like him playing guitar like in a jail cell, and it had like really like close cuts, and it had him getting on the train all pissed off, and I'm like, this fucking guy gets it, you know. And he's young, he's still like getting to know himself in the ring, but it's like in terms of like a package and a brand and stuff like that, he totally gets it. And I feel like a lot of guys need to focus more on that, because like if you're in the ring enough, you're eventually going to get it. Or you're not going to get it and you'll never work again. But it's, in terms of like the character, a lot of those guys, a lot of the indie guys, they need to develop their characters more. So I feel like with that oversaturation comes a lot of hard work to kind of break through and make yourself different.
No, definitely there's oversaturation there, but also a lot of people seem to be copying others. And it's kind of hard sometimes when you're out there, you're trying to make something work, and basically you're trying to be an individual, but sometimes it's hard not to copy something because it's what you've grown up watching. It's what you've learned the most from just observing it. So when it comes to that, I mean, branding, I think you kind of already answered this, but when it comes to branding yourself on social media, the way these guys try to as well, what do you think is the biggest obstacle? Is really just getting out there in front of the camera and really being, you know, vulnerable for them?
Yeah, you know what it is? It's like a lot of guys, you're going to think this is crazy, but a lot of people send me their promos and they're like, listen, be honest with me. What do you think? And there's a couple of guys that are super talented, but it's like they're trying to be somebody else. It's like they're trying to be Ric Flair, or they're trying to be, you know, Scott Hall and stuff. And I'm like, dude, be you. Like, what did Stone Cold say that like true success is? He said that true success is you with the volume turned way up. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these guys are getting that opportunity to be individuals and be unique in the ring, and they mess it up by everyone does a super kick now, you know, everyone does a DDT and stuff. Like, people don't try to be different enough. And I feel like a lot of them don't listen to that voice in their head. Again, sorry for another, that's a crappy Randy Orton reference, but like,
we won't hold that against
you. They don't
you.
Listen to that. Yeah. It's like they all try to be something that they think is already successful. And like, I mean, to reference Randy Orton, it's like, you could say without the cutter, he's not nearly as successful as he is now. But the thing is, he made that cutter different than DDP's, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So he was able to take something from somebody else and then make it his own. And I feel like a lot of guys are taking from other people, but they're not making it their own.
Completely.
That's what you have to
that.
Do. It's like, it's just a head turn, a snicker, a something like that. Ted DiBiase laugh. Everybody laughs, but nobody laughs like Ted DiBiase, you know?
Yeah, he had mentioned before too at a Rahway event too that, you know, after all his years in the business, people still remember that laugh. And he's like, this, no matter what I've done in the ring, when they hear that laugh, mm-hmm. they recognize that more and give that more acknowledgement than anything I've ever done. And he laughs and jokes about it. But I'm sure he's very proud of it too, because like you said, it's very unique. Nobody ever does that.
Yes.
And he does that so perfectly. Absolutely. That he separates himself from everybody else by doing one simple thing and just laughing. Imagine that, right? But you're talking about voices, mm-hmm. right? Voices in people's heads, referring to Randy Orton, and basically, you know, people developing the confidence within themselves to be able to go on the microphone or stand in front of the camera and have that belief that, you know, what they're doing is authentic, that people are going to believe what they want. And obviously it helps them promote and, you know, have people sit in the seats and pay their good money for it. So going back to the voiceovers, though, one of my favorite voiceover guys, and I'm sure a lot of people would agree with me, Kevin Conroy. the voice of Batman. And,
okay.
And I played all the Arkham Knight series, and I love it, and I think he distinctly... And Mark Hamill as well, who does the Joker. Those are two like distinct voices you see there. And they always talk about how, you know, voice acting was considered something like, oh, well, you couldn't get a job as an actor, so now you're a voice actor, so that's so easy. And a lot of people don't understand that the hard work it goes into doing something like that, because they think, oh, you're just staying in front reading a script. No, it's a lot of work, a lot of mental grind going into it, portraying that character, which you're portraying now in a video game. What's the mindset and mentality you have when you do something like that now you're going to do for this game, The Padre, where you're going to be basically the main character? Is there a lot of pressure there? Do you feel a lot of anxiety? Or is it just something that's kind of been a dream of yours since ever playing video games?
Oh, it's been a dream ever since I was a little kid. And like, I've always screwed around and did voices. Like, one of the first voices I ever learned how to do was Don LaFontaine, the guy that does the movie trailer voices. Like, yes. In a world where one man, you know, like that.
That's amazing.
you know, so it's like the High Spot Podcast, rated R. You know, like... I learned how to do that voice, and it kind of went on to like making fun of people on the phone. I used to love the Jerky Boys when I was a little kid. I used to make prank phone calls all the time, but it was something people would always tell me, like, oh, why don't you get into that? And I didn't know how. And I was in bands for a while. I sang for a while, and I had to make a decision. Am I going to focus on my schooling, or am I going to like screw around and do voices and be in bands and stuff? And I made the decision to go to school. So, you know, I got my master's in journalism. I was an editor at NBC for quite some time. I'm a full-time college professor now. I'm an assistant director of the journalism program at Kingsborough Community College in Brooklyn, New York. And through all the work in the video game industry, I met these guys that were doing The Padre. I saw the game on Twitter, and I messaged them like, yo, let's do an interview because this game looks awesome. It's like Resident Evil had a baby with Minecraft. It's awesome.
Nice.
And so I interviewed them, and then I was playing the game, and I loved it, but I noticed that, like, the language in the game needed to be fine-tuned a little bit. They were going for, like, this noir, like, survival horror kind of thing, and they're from Budapest. They're from Hungary.
Yeah.
So English isn't, like, their strong language. So I'm like, guys, this is what we'll do. Like, I want to work with you. Like, I love this game. I love where it's going. I want to work with you. I want to, like, help you edit the story, edit the dialogue. And they're like, okay. So we started working together that way. And then they're like, dude, one day they're like, our voice actor left. And they're like, we need somebody that could do like the voice of the main character of the Padre. And I'm like, I think I could do it. And they're like, well, send us some of the dialogue, like send it over. So I have a Zoom recorder with me all the time, because I'm a journalist. If like anything ever happens, I could just pull it out, do an interview with anybody, like any given time. It's like the freaking RKO, you know, just out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And so they wanted like a dark British voice. So
it's like I was trying to speak like Jeremy Irons meets like Russell Crowe, and I'm the Padre, and I'm a demon hunter. I'm a Catholic priest demon hunter.
You know, and they, I sent it to them, and they were like, holy crap, this is awesome. And I started playing through the rest of the game and all the scenarios and stuff like that, and I redid the lines a bunch of times to try and like capture it perfectly. It's hard work, man, because it's like, I remember as soon as I would give them lines, they would plug it in, and then I would be like, oh, that kind of sucks. Like, I sounded monotone there, you know? So they have a couple of different versions of me saying stuff, and the project goes to Kickstarter, actually, on Halloween.
Really?
So the game's going to be out later this year in April. It's going to be out on Steam first, and then later on the iPhone and Android, and then there's plans for some other stuff later that I can't get into now, but it's like, if you grew up on games like Alone in the Dark, Resident Evil, Devil May Cry, Maniac Mansion, it's like you'll absolutely love it. It's like a badass demon hunter priest like stuck in a mansion just like killing zombies and stuff. It's super, super fun. And like the voice is very dark and scary. So, you know,
wow, that's
it's a lot of fun.
That's amazing, dude. I mean, right now you got me like so psyched up for something like that, because like I said, the voice, you know, goes so much into, you know, the character, the animation can be created, but unless you have that voice that captivates that character, you really have nothing, basically. And that's super amazing, dude. I'm so excited for you. That's can't wait to see that game and actually try it out myself. But you know, when it comes to that too, you said you practiced.
If you guys
are
interested, you can go to the PadreGame.com and you can actually download the alpha demo and check it out. So,
oh really?
Anybody that wants to play it, you could just jump right in. Yeah, and
we'll definitely
they have a Discord channel. If you guys go to discord.com and you write in the name of the game, you can actually talk to me and the developers whenever you want. Like, if you get stuck, if you find a bug, if you just want to bullshit with us, like, we're always on. They're from Hungary, so they're 6 hours ahead of us. So somebody is literally always on that Discord channel ready to, like, just bullshit about video games.
That's
so
crazy.
It's great.
How do you train for something like that? I mean, like you said, you practice, you did choir, you did music, but do you go, like, to a voice coach or something to develop that? Or is just you just practicing over and over again to develop that type of deep voice, which I'm trying to do right now?
Yeah, it's just practice. It's like, I remember I used to listen to Opie and Anthony all the time, and I loved, like I said, I love Don LaFontaine, but Pablo Francisco, the comedian, does a great Don LaFontaine, and he was doing, like, prank phone calls on Opie and Anthony, like, calling up people and saying he was, like, a doctor and a member of their family was dying. Like, he's like, "I'm sorry, but I need to tell you that your husband's going to die." And I'm like, oh, my God, this guy is ridiculous. And I would just practice and practice and practice, and then it got to the point where, like, I found that part in my throat where it was, where that voice is, you know, that bass, and I could just do it whenever I wanted to, you know? So it's hard work, but at the same time too, it's fun. And like for somebody like me, that's not like, I mean, I'm a classically trained, you know, singer. Like I took vocal lessons and stuff when I was a kid, but yeah. I mean, I'm not a professional singer by any stretch of the imagination. You know, it's just.
But I have to imagine that helps you a little bit, right? In terms of knowing your diaphragm and breathing correctly, because those are all things that people take for granted when they do voiceover stuff.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, and it's like I've interviewed a lot of great voice actors too, like. I interviewed Allison Packard, who plays Jibanyan on Yo-Kai Watch, and I've interviewed Dana Snyder, who plays Master Shake on Aqua Teen Hunger Force. So it's like I learned a lot from interviewing those guys and listening to them prepare for roles and what they have to do. So it's pretty interesting stuff. It's definitely, like I said, this is something I never, ever expected would ever happen to me in my entire life. So I'm just totally enjoying it. So.
No, definitely, and expect the unexpected. I mean, definitely enjoy it right now because it seems like you're having a ball right now. I'm having a ball just listening to you talk about it because it seems so exciting and something that's so surreal, but you can't help but just, you know, enjoy the ride because some people get lost in the fact that I'm doing this. Oh, my God, I have so much pressure on me. But you really seem to be enjoying it and really taking it for what it's worth, which is great, man. Could be happy for you, Patrick.
Thanks, man.
Real quick, I have another question, though, about the whole video game. You said, you know, for developers and going in there, you know, I've constantly always seen people, for example, go out there and, you know, developers come out with the game and they give it to, you know, a selected group of, you know, video game testers and they test it out for bugs and things that are wrong. How does one get into that to become a video game tester? Because I would always joke with my friends, wow, what a great career that would be, you know, just sitting out there playing video games and testing it and giving your comments on it. But it's not something, for example, you can find on LinkedIn.com and say, hey, I want to be a video game tester.
It's funny because, like, I was on the Discord channel today for the game, and one of the streamers is the community manager for another game that I interviewed somebody for. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I asked him, I'm like, how did you get involved in that? And he goes, basically what I would do is I would go on, like, the Steam message board and the Discord channel for these games, and I would say, listen, you don't have to pay me. I just want to play your game. And I'll give you, like, my honest feedback. So then he did that for basically anywhere from, like, you know, 5 to 10 games. And there you go. You know, so it's like a lot of these wrestlers, when they first start out, they're wrestling for, you know, 5, 10 bucks. Some of them are wrestling for free. Mm-hmm. And then they get over. You know, it's the same exact thing. It's like with video game journalism, I remember, like, when I was writing for my college newspaper, I used to write video game companies like Sony and Atlas and stuff. And I'm like, listen, I write for the student newspaper. We play video games. Send me games. I'll review them. And a bunch of companies said no. But then I remember, I'll never forget it, man. Atlas sent me like a copy of Persona 3. And I'm like, this is like a $60 game, man. And I just got it for free. Oh my God, this is awesome. You know, so it's just like, it's try, and try again. And then it'll eventually happen. It's like, I tell my journalism students all the time, like the people that don't become the things that they want to become, isn't because they're not good enough. It's because they quit before anything can really happen, you know? So if that's something that, like, you're interested in doing, like anything else, just keep doing it. You know, Teddy Long used to get Ric Flair coffee all the time. That's how he broke into the wrestling industry, you know? So once you get your foot in the door, you do whatever you have to do to stay there, you know? And then you put your hand on the knob and you close it when you think it's time for you to go.
Yeah, definitely. And something that's like it's really easy to tell with you when you're talking, Patrick, and with a lot of the guests we've had, whether it be talent or writers, it's just passion. If you're passionate about the thing you're doing, I hate using those old adages, you know, because I think they're corny, but it's kind of true, right? Do something you love, never work a day in your life. And it's kind of true. I mean, you're going to be working really hard and it's going to be exhausting and tiring, but if it's something you enjoy, then that exhaustion kind of gets overseen and overlooked because, you know, at the end of the day, you're happy and you're enjoying it. And so it's clear for you. Absolutely. All the things and all the, you know, all the things that you're involved in. I mean, I think the main question also is like, where do you find the time to relax? I mean, you're a teacher, professor. You're doing voiceovers. You're writing articles. You're interviewing wrestlers. You're promoting this event right now, November 4th in Ridgefield Park, New Jersey, Battle Club Pro. Where do you find the time to unwind, Patrick?
I don't.
You don't. Basically, like, you don't unwind, and you don't sleep. Basically, is what you're saying.
Yep, it's like I wake up tired, I go to sleep tired. My wife is the same exact way, man. She's just as much an Iron Man as I am. You know, that's the way we roll. We work hard as often as we can, you know, and when we relax, we really relax. But, I mean, we're balls to the wall, like, trying to make shit happen, like, every single second of every single day. And if that's the way you got to be if you want things to happen. And I'm really happy, too, that you mentioned November 4th because I just want to say, like, being a wrestling journalist and then becoming affiliated with a wrestling promotion is a huge risk. You know, it's like people could be like, oh, wait, now you're on the other side. Like, what are you? Are you a writer? Are you this? Are you that? It's the same thing with doing the voiceover for the video games. Like, I had to pick the right game to work with because I had to completely believe in it. Otherwise, it's just like me. People are going to be like, what are you, like a mark? Like, you want to be in video games? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, or like you said, you know, taking your picture with the wrestler. You know, you don't want to because you want to cross that line or have, like, your hand in the cookie jar, basically. Yeah, and I understand. Yeah.
Exactly. So I just want to, like, you know, set the record straight, too. Like, over the years, like, I've been contacted by easily a half a dozen promotions to, like, sponsor things, to work with them and stuff. And I said yes to Battle Club Pro because I believe in their product, and they do something very unique in terms of, like, the talent that they bring in from the outside, and they don't bring in big names to squash their guys. So it's like, if perfect example, like, if you see, like, the Carnies versus the Kingdom is one of the matches November 4th.
Yeah.
That's going to be a match. That's not going to be a squash match. That's not going to be the Kingdom completely decimating the Carnies. I don't know who is going to win that match. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the Carnies are one of the best indie tag teams I've ever seen. They're hilarious. Like, if you guys were at the last Battle Club Pro show, they had a war with British Strong Style, and that's not easy to do. You know, so it's like the big name guys that they bring in, like Matt Cross is fighting JT Dunn. Mm-hmm. JT Dunn is a horse, man. JT Dunn is great, but, like, Matt Cross is a Lucha Underground star. Those two guys are going to push each other to the limit. So it's like every match on this card is one that, like, if I had a prostate problem or if I had a problem like where I had to go to the bathroom, I would not want to go to a Battle Club Pro show because there's not that one match where you're like, oh, you know what? This is the match I can go take a shit at. You can't do that.
No, you can't.
In one of their cards, you know? So
I said,
like,
the same thing,
like,
to Jeff,
said,
too.
JT Dunn. Huh?
I said the same thing to my tag team partner, Jeff. I was like, if this is one where you want to go to the concessions for a second or go to the bathroom for a pee break, whatever, you're not going to be able to because the card's stacked from top to bottom.
It's like the last card, they had MJ Jenkins versus Deonna Purrazzo. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't seen MJ Jenkins that much. I didn't know really, like, what to expect from her. And she completely took Deonna Purrazzo to the limit. That was probably one of the best matches. And that was, like, the match where I was saying to myself, you know what, this may be the match that I can go get something to drink. I was totally wrong. Totally became a supporter of MJ Jenkins after that. So it's like this card, Jason Cage versus Matt McIntosh. Matt McIntosh is another animal. He's super good. He's got, like, a lot of people bill him as, like, a light heavyweight, but he's got a ton of talent. He can wrestle in the heavyweight division.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Mr. Grimm wrestle before?
We actually we haven't seen wrestling live in person. We've seen his stuff online, and we actually interviewed him. We also interviewed Gary J and Shane Mercer as well, you know, kind of building up to this card. And, you know, the one thing I wanted to ask them, which I'll ask you right now too, is, like, you know, they talked about their association with Battle Club Pro, how they want to be part of the promotion. Eventually we're going to have Darius Carter as well, which would be a great interview. But, you know, I kept asking them the same thing just to see what different perspective they had. And what I basically asked them was that, you know, what can fans expect to go to a Battle Club Pro event, which they haven't? You know, say a newbie's coming in and, like, this is going to be their first wrestling event. What are they going to walk away from this event knowing after it's over, as opposed to other new promotions out there? Because, again, remember how we talked about in the beginning, a lot of people are kind of copy-cutting themselves. Everything's a lot of similarities. What separates Battle Club Pro from the rest?
It's like I said before, one of the big things that separates Battle Club Pro from the rest is that everyone on the card gets an opportunity to shine.
Yeah.
There's no Barry Horowitz on the card. You know, there's no Brooklyn Brawler on the card. No offense to those guys. There's no Johnny Rods on the card. Sorry, Johnny. You know, but it's like everyone gets a chance to work and everyone gets a chance to, like, show what they're made of. It's like there are people that I've seen lose matches in Battle Club Pro and come out sitting pretty. So it's like the last show, I'm sure you guys remember, it's like Pete Dunne versus Darius Carter.
Yeah.
Everyone was talking about that. Everyone was trash talking Darius Carter. Where's Darius Carter right now? He's in England. He's doing his thing.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like,
yes,
there's not a lot of indie guys that would have the opportunity to go and have a 35-minute match with Pete Dunne and get their ass handed to them all over the ring and then manage to hit their finish on him and things like that. So it's like, these guys understand wrestling. They understand what fans want to see, and they let everyone get an opportunity to shine. If you're an indie guy, you want tapes. You want clips. You want things that you can show promoters. If you're an up-and-coming wrestler, this is a place where you want to work because you're going to get an opportunity to do just that.
Yeah, and if you're a fan too, you're going to go out there and you're not going to really worry so much about, oh, who's going to win, who's going to lose. Because at the end of the day, mm-hmm. we all win. You know, the talent wins, the audience wins because they're entertained, and that just, you know, intrigues you more to go out to the next event, to wherever it is they're located. So, yeah, it's a win-win in all types of situations. Mm-hmm. What are you looking forward to the most there? You're going to be there November 4th in Ritual Park, New Jersey. What are you looking forward to the most? It's going to be headlined by JT Dunne and Matt Cross. What's the match you're looking forward to the most?
So, like I said before, I don't think there's, like, one crappy match on the card. And the Shane Mercer-Kyle the Beast match is going to be awesome. But
yeah.
I am personally looking forward to Federated versus the Ugly Ducklings. If you guys have not seen the Ugly Ducklings work, holy crap. They're, like,
Rain
Public Enemy and, like, the Young Bucks, like, mixed. They do spots. They take a beating. Their finish is awesome. The Duck Stay device. Like, these guys are balls to the wall, like nonstop energy. Their manager is hilarious and he takes bumps. They're super fun to watch. And, like, Federated are just absolute beasts. They're monsters. So it's like, it's a clash in styles. That's going to be probably the best match on the card as far as I'm concerned.
Patrick, I thank you so much for your time, man. Guys, if you are interested in meeting him, he'll be there. What time are you going to actually be there? Are you going to be there for the entire event?
Yeah, absolutely.
And guys, make sure you look out for, it's coming out February, right? February, the book, The Minds Behind the Games, which is your book, your first book coming out. And then when can we expect the wrestling book to come out?
I would say I'm probably going to be finished with it sometime next year, like late next year. The video game book is available for pre-order on Amazon and Barnes & Noble now. So if you go on Barnes & Noble and Amazon mm-hmm. and you write in The Minds Behind the Games, it comes up right away. And like I told you guys before, Battle Club Pro, battleclubpro.com. You can find out more about the brand, the video game. It's thepadregame.com. We have a Kickstarter starting October 31st. You can download the demo for free, mess around with it. So if you guys want to get in contact with me, I'm at ReviewFix, ReviewFix on Twitter. And then just my name, Patrick Hickey Jr. on Instagram. I love to talk to people and have conversations about video games, wrestling, all that cool stuff. So hit me up.
Patrick Hickey Jr., thank you so much for your time. We can't wait to see you November 4th in Ridgefield Park, New Jersey for Battle Club Pro. They All Fall Down. Thank you so much, man.
No problem, man. Thank you.
And a special thanks goes out to Patrick Hickey Jr. I mean, I could have talked to him for hours.
That was all you, Brian. That was all you.
It was all me, but again, it was so interesting because, you know, more than anything, it felt like a conversation because you just kept going from one subject to the other, talking about his book, obviously, guys. If you guys don't know what it is, it's coming out pretty soon. He has a wrestling book coming out, but the first book he's got coming out at the beginning of next year will most likely be something that he's been working on for quite some time. The minds behind the games, interviews with cult and classic video game developers. Great insight on that if you're a big gamer. I know I am to an extent, but I'm a novice when it comes to that, as you could tell during the interview to an extent. And also his wrestling book coming out, and he talks about, you know, his interview with Ted DiBiase, which will be in that book. And, you know, this guy's kind of like done it all. And it's kind of inspiring too, Jeff, because that's kind of the position we want to be in, pretty much.
What is the impression that you got out of your interview here? What, how does Patrick come off as a more of a fan? You know, we heard about how he's not, doesn't try to cross that line. What would you say is one of the things that you learned about Patrick in this interview?
I think he gets it. What I admire a lot about him is his character, where, for example, the story he said about the Ultimate Warrior, not wanting to take a picture with wrestlers because he wants to be a true dedicated journalist. And, you know, he wasn't bashing people who do that, but for him, that was like more of a moral code for him. And you have to admire something like that. I mean, it's gotten him this far. It's developed a partnership with Battle Club Pro. It's gotten him this successful. And you know what? The biggest thing I got out of it is during our interview, I mean, this guy's married, he's doing a million things. I asked him, well, when do you get any sleep? When is there any downtime to enjoy things? And he's like, there isn't. I'm always tired. I'm always lacking something. And it just proves the adage too that if you want to make it in anything, you have to sacrifice a lot of things. But if you're passionate about it, it's going to be successful.
So hustle is the name of the game. That's something that the Jersey Wrecking Crew certainly does. And again, man, a great interview with Patrick Hickey Jr. Man, your interview skills are just getting on point, man. There's gonna be a time when you don't need me, and it's just gonna be the Trendsetter Show.
Nah, dude, Jersey Wrecking Crew isn't the same with just one person, Jeff.
So you are listening to the High Spot Podcast, Battle Club Pro Special Edition. I am Jeff Martin, alongside the Trendsetter Brian Berga. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcasts. Listen, November the 4th is quickly approaching. Tickets are on sale now. Listen, Carlos just told me he wants to turn people aside. That is his main priority. He wants to say no. No tickets for you. So definitely it is something that yeah, it's something that he definitely wants to do. And listen, we're here going to try to make that happen for him. And listen, first time match is headlined by JT Dunn against Matt Cross from Lucha Underground, and Tough Enough. So you know that the first time ever matchup, 1 year anniversary, they all fall down. You've been listening to our special interviews, and they continue this week, man. Mm-hmm. We are rapidly approaching, and next week, a couple of more interviews for you as the buildup for Battle Club Pro reaches its climax.
Yes, it's going to reach its climax. It's all going to happen November 4th. How there are any tickets available, I still don't understand. But again, we're working towards that. You know, if you're going to miss out on this event, I implore you, don't miss out on it, because you're going to regret it. It's a great card build up from, I said it time and time again, from the top to bottom. You guys want to see it. You don't want to miss out on it. And like we had when we spoke to Carlos very briefly, he said, I want to make sure people come to this event knowing that this is something that they're not going to soon forget and want to come back for more. And I got a feeling that's going to happen.
Yeah, so our advice to you is don't wait till November 3rd. Don't think you're going to come and walk in and you're going to find a ticket available, because it is most likely going to be a sellout, and we hopefully it is, you know. And you are listening to the High Spot Podcast and Jersey Wrecking Crew. Please keep up to date on our Facebook page as well as our Twitter to make sure when the next interview comes out. But again, we thank our guest Patrick Hickey Jr. from ReviewFix.com, Mr. ReviewFix. And of course, we've got more interviews lined up for you, and we will see you next time.